Thank you for joining me for another episode of the Fantasy Force podcast. Today I'm joined by one of the giants in the fantasy football industry, and rather than have a long winding introduction, I'm just going to get right to the interview. So here it is. Today I am honored to be joined by one of the biggest names in fantasy football, Christopher Harris. Everyone follows him over on Twitter at Harris Football. I'm sure, like me, everyone subscribes to the Harris Football podcast. And Chris, how you doing tonight?
I was a pregnant pause. I'm doing really well. Thanks for having me on.
The pleasure's all on this side of the table. And
as they say.
Yeah. What I wanted to do, knowing I have someone so knowledgeable, I did a lot of running back talk on my last episode about the rookies, and now I want to shift into the pros and talk about some of the running backs and how they're being affected by the offensive line play in front of them, be it, you know, positive or negative. And I guess to start off on the positive, I want to talk about good running backs who are matched up with a good line. And I know the first guy out of the gate is someone you're a big fan of, Latavius Murray out in Oakland. He had himself a great season last year, 266 for just a little over 1,000 yards, 6 touchdowns. The Raiders have upgraded their offensive line, bringing in Asemele. With Murray, I know they say they want to bring in a little more competition behind him, but if they are not able to get someone who can kind of take the load so quickly, Murray's still a huge buy in fantasy football, right?
I think so. I think Asemele was the best offensive lineman at any position that was on the free agent market, and they certainly paid a lot for him, but he's versatile. He could help at tackle if they wound up needing help, even at left tackle. It's going to be a better line if he plays guard, because it means they're getting good tackle play. I'm with you as identifying that one as a line that seems like it's on the rise. It was pretty good last year. It could be very good this year. And an offense in general that could be on the rise even more than it was last season. I always want to be careful about reading between the lines of what the Raiders or any team are rumored to be doing, right? Because, like, they're rumored to be thinking about a running back in the first round, Ezekiel Elliott, or they're in on the stakes for C.J. Anderson or whomever, right? Or they're quoted as saying they're not sure Latavius Murray can take that. Like, all of that for me falls under the I don't want to listen to category, the coach speak category. Mm-hmm. Which isn't to say you have to be blind to potential depth chart threats. And, you know, if they take Ezekiel Elliott, that's going to be a big hit to Latavius Murray. Let's put it this way. Latavius Murray doesn't have to have the 300-plus touches that he had last year to still be really good for fantasy, because, you know, you and I could probably sit here and name 5 backs in the entire NFL that we feel comfortable is going to wind up with 300-plus touches. Like, give me between 200 and 250. Give me what looks to be a pretty good offensive line, and I will tell you that I think Murray is a buy in fantasy.
Absolutely, and certainly I think they made the right kind of upgraded offensive line. I mean, there's so much that you need to have them together, for an extended period of time for things like this to work out, which is why, you know, massive offensive line signings for a single team often aren't great, because there needs to be that kind of teamwork with them. But they bring in a really cerebral and smart player in Asemele, and they certainly have the bodies up there, and Austin Howard now looks like he's the weakest link, but he's still a really great run blocker. He'll mm-hmm. still have problems with Denver, but it seems like no matter what, even if they add Elliott, you can still get some sort of value out of Murray in redraft, dynasty, any sort of format you're looking at.
Sure. I mean, listen, if they draft Elliott, I'll tell you, in La Liga Lebowski, I own Murray. He was very nice for me last year. You know, a nice surprise that he was a little up and down, but, certainly started for me a bunch. And if they draft mm-hmm. Elliott, I'm going to admit that's a hit to his dynasty stock. That's a hit to his 2016 stock. But your point is well taken. I mean, we're going to take him lower if that happens, but we're still going to get value out of where we take him.
Absolutely. And another back, and certainly he was, the top back in fantasy football last year, another back that really benefits from his offensive line is Devontae Freeman. And there was, a big story a couple of years ago that the Atlanta Falcons wanted to get tougher on their offensive line. And now, they certainly committed to that. And, adding Alex Mack this offseason to, kind of shore up the center of that line. Now their biggest worry is re-signing Chris Chester and what they're going to do if they don't bring him back. But, I mean, you know, again, he's another guy that went for a little over 260 in touches and just over 1,000 yards, and he caught the ball. He did it all, and which is not to say that he is the most versatile back in the league, but they certainly found enough places to get him the ball, and it looks like that's another one where the offensive line is paired well with a player who knows what to do behind them. Whether or not he's an otherworldly talent, he seems to be content in that kind of system.
Yeah, I mean, any complaint that I'm going to have about Devontae Freeman isn't going to be about his offensive line. You know, I'll say up front, as you know, let alone in March, you know, when we get to August or early September and start trying to intuit who we think the best lines are, we're going to miss a lot. You know, I think you made a great point, which is it's not a lot about the individual pieces. It's mostly how those pieces come together and create a unit. And we thought the Falcons line would stink last year. Mm-hmm. You know, it seemed to be the consensus. I had Ross Tucker on my podcast and he was like, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm really worried about the Falcons. And as it turned out, they were pretty good. You know, they didn't get good play from the interior of the line, but it was enough. And frankly, with a player like Freeman, what matters more than anything is like the exterior of the line. We don't want Devontae Freeman going up the middle too often.
Absolutely.
Which is a question of why, you know, is Alex Mack, does he make a massive difference for Freeman? You know, I'm not sure, but he's a really good player. You know, he might have taken a step back or two, but it's tough to tell. First of all, I'll just say I'm not the greatest about it. I can't like look at tape and go, oh, well, that was the center's fault. Like, you know, a lot of times mm-hmm. I would have to break a play down, you know, to far more greater detail than I typically do. But I will say, like, you know, I don't think Freeman's fantasy weaknesses, his potential as a fantasy bust that I actually do see, I don't track them to the line. I think the line's fine. And I think he probably dodged a little bit of a bullet, Alfred Morris, you know, not going there. I connected the dots and thought maybe Kyle Shanahan would, you know, be interested in bringing him in.
Morris, yeah.
Like, listen, if this is what the depth chart is, and it's probably not, they'll probably get another back. But, you know, good, you know. I still don't particularly believe in the player, and I know there are going to be some folks for fantasy who take him as a first-round pick, but I don't think I'm going to have him anywhere near there, but it's not because of the line.
Yeah, and I agree, definitely, especially with, you know, drafting him. I don't know if I'll be taking him so early. There are so many wide receivers I would rather have, and even when it comes to running backs, I think there are a few more guys I would rather take a chance on, you know, especially because they have in-house options that they're also going to try and work in a little more. And, you know, someone that's also a really fast riser in draft boards everywhere is David Johnson from the Cardinals. Mm-hmm. And he's running behind what is now a rebuilt offensive line. Just a few years ago, that was one of the real weaknesses for the Cardinals, and they were able to snag Jared Veltier in free agency. They added Mike Iupati. Now they have Evan Mathis on the line as well. The big thing for me was that David Johnson wasn't the only Cardinals running back to find success behind that line. He went 125 for 581. And the 8 touchdowns is a huge number there, but Chris Johnson almost hit 1,000 yards on under 200 carries. He was 196 for 814 yards. Ellington even had decent success, 45 for 289. So is the David Johnson hype just a little too much now for you to be a buyer?
If people are going to be taking David Johnson in the first half of the first round, that's too high for me. I did a list on my podcast, I can't remember, it's all a blur, about a week ago, of what I thought were the top 10 talented mm-hmm. running backs in the league. And I think, you know, Johnson was close to that list. He might've been, I think he was on it, you know, the very sort of the bottom. I was impressed with him for sure. Always are trying to differentiate, you know, between that was a wide open lane, nice job not falling over, and, you know, somebody who actually makes something happen on his own. The criticism of David Johnson from people who had seen his college tape, you know, I hadn't seen much of it because he played at a small school, was for a big guy, he's actually not particularly physical and he catches it really well and he's good in space, but you're not going to get him knocking guys over. And when he gets to the NFL, the exact opposite, you know, not the opposite. He was good catching the ball. He made a couple big plays and he has good speed for his size, but he was pretty physical.
Yeah,
so you have
absolutely.
To give him credit for running. You know, I think a little bit like Latavius Murray, to be honest. I think they're kind of similar players. Murray might be a little bit more of an athletic freak, but Johnson's a pretty good athlete for his size. I don't think that line is, let me put it this way, I don't think that line is not a question mark. That's a way of saying it is a question mark. Yeah. I mean, it's so easy for people to say they threw bodies at the problem, right? And that becomes sort of the crutch argument for why you're, you know, why you want to like that situation. You know, when the Cardinals took DJ Humphries in the first round last year, right? Oh, well, they got a tackle. So at least they've got that figured out.
Exactly. Yeah, they have a good power blocker off the right side.
Right. Did he play? I believe he did not play in a single game.
Yeah.
Which isn't to say he won't eventually be a good player, which isn't to say it was a bad pick. Nothing like that. It's just beware the argument that says because they threw bodies out of it, that means the bodies at it, the problem is solved. The appeal of David Johnson is very manifest, right? I think it's a good enough line. It's a great passing offense that's very aggressive. He can actually stay on the field when they throw the ball, and he's turned out to be a pretty physical dude. If you were going to take him at the end of the first round, I could see that. I wouldn't have too big of a problem with it, even though I'd love to see more. You know, I'd say the same thing about C.J. Anderson from last year. You know, you just worry that in a small little sample size, things can turn around if Carson Palmer gets hurt or whatever. But, you know, I think the folks who are viewing him as a no-brainer, top five overall type pick, it could work out. It feels to me, I'm interested in your opinion, it feels to me like a stretch.
Yeah, again, you're absolutely right, and the C.J. Anderson comp was great, that it's just such a small sample size. I don't know if I'm going to really trust that. Honestly, even with the back end of a first-round pick, because I feel like, especially in fantasy, that's where a lot of teams go bad, is where they kind of throw it all in on those guys, which is exactly what happened with C.J. Anderson owners last year, was that he was going mid-first round, and those owners really had to find other solutions. It's certainly good by the end of the season, but that doesn't help much if you've lost, you know, your first 4 or 5 weeks.
Yeah, you know, I will say that in a vacuum, from what I've seen on film, I view David Johnson as a significantly more talented player than C.J. Anderson.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I think things need to go right for C.J. Anderson. I think David Johnson can help make those things go right. However, it may just be safer. You know, I think a lot of times, when you know, we're going to have so long to talk about draft strategy. I think a lot of times the recommendation on where to take a player comes down to what kind of league you're in. I mean, I'm in leagues and in leagues where it feels like, you know, the waiver wire is not a place I can just dominate. You know, if I don't have the first waiver pick or the second waiver pick, I'm not getting great guys because everybody's awake in the leagues that I'm in.
Yeah.
But if a listener happens to be in a league where it's like, yeah, pretty much I can just get whoever I want off the waiver wire because half the people aren't paying attention closely enough, why take a chance on a David Johnson? Why not get the wide receiver that's, you know, a lot more locked in and maybe a little less likely to get hurt? And then you're going to be able to solve the running back problem later on.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's certainly become a popular strategy, you know, kind of grabbing your running backs a little later, just to go in line with how the NFL is treating the position. But he is one of those guys, if I could get him in like the early second, mid second, I would definitely take a chance on him there. I don't know if I could build a team around that.
Right. Yeah. It just comes down, you know, and in a lot of leagues, he's not going to last that long.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely probably a good guy to aim for in trades, depending on how the beginning of his season goes. But taking a look at kind of guys that have the good line to go along with their talent, there are definitely some backs in the league that are playing behind, I don't want to call them insufficient offensive lines, but there are guys that could be doing much better if the group of guys in front of them could get it together a little better. And certainly at the top of that list is Todd Gurley, who still had a ridiculously impressive rookie season, even, you know, overcoming the ACL injury and you know, battling to get on the field. And it just, his offensive line just kind of looks like a mess. And certainly they have the potential to get better. You know, Greg Robinson, sometimes those first round lineman picks, you know, take some time. That's a big thing for the NFL, is to, you know, getting the lineman to adjust to the game. But it even looks like, you know, some of the moves they made, like bringing Saffold back last year after the botched physical with the Raiders. It just looks like they probably won't have things figured out for next season. So does that kind of hurt your expectations of Gurley? Because now we know there's no passing game, you know, in St. Louis, unless they make a big move somewhere.
Right. Well, it's definitely none in St. Louis.
Right. Yeah, exactly. In L.A.
That was the patronizing Harris. You just got a little sniff of the patronizing Harris there. That was great. Yeah, I mean, what I would say is there is no reason to expect things have wildly changed for the Rams offensive line. However, that doesn't mean that things haven't wildly changed for the Rams offensive line. Like, things do change from year to year. They didn't have the right tackle for most of the season, right? He had a broken leg.
Right.
And maybe that makes a difference. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know that we're smart enough to say for sure that Todd Gurley has a bad line for 2016. I think you're right that we can look back at 2015 and say he had a pretty bad line, and he did a lot of what he did sort of on big plays and not really as a result of anything anybody up front was doing. Mm-hmm. I'll take the talent. You know, I agree with you, of course. If he was running behind the Cowboys line, there would be just so fewer doubts. And, you know, maybe in a situation where it's not a standard kind of fantasy league, where maybe you're starting two quarterbacks, or maybe you're starting three wide receivers in a flex, you know, maybe if positional scarcity doesn't weigh so heavily in favor of running backs, maybe I don't go Todd Gurley in those first one, two, three picks. I think in standard leagues, despite the offensive line, you know, I wish it was better. Maybe it will turn out to be better. I think it's a fair guess that it might not be completely dominant. Understanding that there are for sure going to be bumps in the road and games like, I'm thinking of that Rams game against the Bengals last year where it was the straw that broke the camel's back for a lot of Todd Gurley owners, and yeah, they traded him away, and that was a bad move. So despite all that, I mean, Adrian Peterson has up and down weeks too, like most running backs do. And yeah, you look at Antonio Brown versus Todd Gurley and you say it's going to be so much more consistent to have Antonio Brown. True, but the wide receiver that you're going to get in the second round in lieu of taking your running back there will be awfully good too, and the downgrade from the Antonio Brown to whoever that receiver is not going to be a massive downgrade, which is why there's positional scarcity among running backs, which is why, you know, no matter the situation, Todd Gurley is going to be a top 2-3 pick for me.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, definitely in redraft, he's still going to be one of the first guys off the board, and for dynasty purposes, I still love guys like that are immensely talented and maybe aren't finding themselves in the perfect situation, because it means if one or two small things improve, if they hit on a tackle, maybe Isaiah Battle, you know, who's on their practice squad, I think now, gets, you know, a little jump heading into the season. If one or two things kind of go a little better, they go from being a great talent that is overcoming this situation to really being like a true difference maker in fantasy, which is not to say Gurley's not already that, but again, putting a couple people in front of him that can really open a lane or two would do a ton for his fantasy value.
Yeah, I mean, listen, what's going to happen? I'm telling you right now what's going to happen with Todd Gurley, okay? So he's going to go real high because I'm going to, and a lot of people are going to pump him and say, take him. And then the first month of the season, there's going to be a lot of hype. You know, there's going to be a lot of they're going to be on Hard Knocks. They're going to be, you know, it's going to be a microscope. And right, he's going to have two games out of his first four where it doesn't go that well. And the world is going to be ready to explode with anger and rage about how we all tricked everybody into taking Todd Gurley. And a lot of people are going to sell him, and it's not going to look so good. And then he's going to have, in week five, he's going to have a game where he goes for 387 yards and 9 touchdowns, and everyone's going to go, whoops. Like, I'm good with drafting talent. I'm with you. Like, there's a chance, because I don't think we know from year to year about offensive lines all that well. You know, there, I think within the margins, we don't. Things can change. I'll take the guy who I think is, you know, the best running back to enter the league since Adrian Peterson. That's my opinion.
Absolutely. And kind of moving down, someone else who came out of the same class with Gurley, Melvin Gordon, who disappointed a lot of owners. It's one of those things. I don't think he's going to have zero touchdowns again, but certainly that line also isn't doing him any favors. But I know when a lot of people look at Gordon, they look at Woodhead and his fantasy success, and his fantasy success was largely tied to, you know, catching the ball. You know, 80 receptions for 755. You know, certainly Gordon has the fumbling to overcome, 6 fumbles, and I think it was 4 that were lost. But again, Gordon seems like he's another one of those guys. If he gets a body or two in front of him, or if just a few different runs break a different way, we're looking at a much better player, at least on paper, stats-wise. Is he another guy you're buying? Maybe not as fiercely as Gurley, but for the price you're going to get him at, Melvin Gordon seems like a pretty big buy to me.
Yeah, me too. And what's so funny, I mean, we're going to spend months and months and months saying that fact, you know, saying what we think of it, you know, so all of our shows, we're going to be saying we like Gordon. And suddenly his ADP will go up to a point where we'll be like, okay, pump the brakes on Gordon a little bit. We don't like him that, you know. So it's sort of the nature of what fantasy football becoming like a 12-month-a-year pursuit sort of turns that into. Mm-hmm. But knowing how much disdain he received from from fantasy owners last year, you know, if we could take a snapshot of the end of the season about how much folks were mad at him and, you know, he wasn't even playing anymore by the end of the year. Then yes, you know, no question, I would want to draft him above that level because that level would be, you know, 10th round or something. We're going to see him as a post-hype sleeper on so many lists all summer and in so many magazines and on so many podcasts. It is going to turn around and people are going to be willing to take that chance. I'm with you. The fumbling is a big deal. The same would be for Matt Jones. You know, we can't say, hey, these really talented players that we like, we can't just ignore the fact that they seem to have really bad fumbling problems. Mm-hmm. Those things really could derail their careers completely.
Yeah. That'll get them benched quicker than anything.
Right. But if they don't, if they figure that out, you know, I thought Melvin Gordon was very good on tape and probably did have the worst offensive line in football last year. And it's another one worth asking the question. Like, we haven't had a draft yet, so hopefully the Chargers maybe help out the line there. But, and again, mm-hmm. rookies don't always – you've been saying it, you know, they always help right away. You know, is King Dunlap still your left tackle? Then I don't like your offensive line very much, you know, and I think he is. Yeah. So I think there still could be problems there, and I don't imagine a massive, massive breakout for Gordon. I want to keep his ADP down and then draft him and then have him be pretty good. Because I think pretty good is, I think, probably the best we're going to expect.
Exactly. And it's certainly for what you're drafting him to be on your team, pretty good is, I guess, wildly exceeding where you're probably going to be taking him.
Well, we'll see. Like I said, I worry the ADP will go up just based on hype, but we'll see.
Yeah. And the third rookie here, and it looks like the rookie class wasn't helped out at all by their lines, Thomas Rawls. Seattle kind of looks like a mess with whatever's going to happen with their offensive line now, with Russell Okung gone to Denver, J.R. Sweezy gone to Tampa Bay. I feel like it's bad when you're talking about the loss of J.R. Sweezy, like it's a big deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, certainly not a premier talent, but it does make a difference that you're bringing in an entire new side of your line. And obviously, you know, the Unger trade sort of backfired on them heading into the season. So, is Rawls, and this just seems to be the question with these guys, is this someone you're going to be buying heavily? Because I think he's certainly someone that's going to make a lot of those lists that, you know, it seemed like the Seahawks offense did better when Rawls came in instead of Lynch. I know that's going to be a huge narrative kind of heading into how a lot of people do their ranks. Is he someone you're going to be buying? Because I feel like his price is going to skyrocket heading into this season.
Not if his price skyrockets. You know, if you're right about what the market is for him, I'm not going to own him. I think he's good. I think he's a good player. And I've made this comparison probably 1,000 times, but I think of Ahmad Bradshaw mm-hmm. as a, you know, a littler guy, but not a good, small guy.
Yeah, tough runner.
Tough guy, very violent, likes contact. Maybe it's not good for his longevity. Maybe we're going to look back on that broken leg and say, okay, this is kind of what he is because he's such a violent runner and he's not a, you know, not a 230-pound back. Mm-hmm. And the offensive line, you know, I think there's a chance for a counter-narrative that says, watch out. You know, that offensive line has the potential to be really bad. This is one where I just don't think we're going to know until we see. And there's a chance on the spectrum of possible outcomes that they figure it out. They're awfully good at personnel. And they usually know what they're doing, and they usually let guys go, and they don't come back and really hurt them. Mm-hmm. And you know, I guess you could make the case that the Unger trade was bad because the guy who they got for him wasn't productive and then got hurt. But I don't think anybody looks at Max Unger in New Orleans and said, "Oh, thank God he rescued that offense."
Yeah, no one's saying what a difference maker.
Right, and so you know, but like, is Jamarcus Webb really going to play for the Seahawks? Whoa, you know, is he going to play tackle? Whoa, this is not good. Like, you know, Bradley Soule, is he really, you know, speaking of the Cardinals, like, didn't we hear his name for years with the Cardinals?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, he's gone after barely playing last year. Is Gary Gilliam the left tackle? Like, there seem to be some real questions there that I do trust the Seahawks to be able to figure out to some degree. But, you know, they probably don't get the benefit of the doubt. And probably I agree that folks would be making a mistake just assuming, oh, well, Rawls was really good for a month and he was obviously better than Lynch and Russell Wilson was great, and that's going to take tons of pressure off the running game. And, like, no, there's a potential for that offense to take a real step back. You know, again, I think you're smartest, you know, basing your suppositions on a range of possible outcomes on the spectrum. And there's significant chunk of the spectrum that has the Seahawks as a not great offense next year.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're right that they do kind of get the benefit of the doubt when it comes to, you know, free agency and letting guys go. If there's one organization that kind of knows how to build from their own talent outside of the Packers, it's definitely the Seahawks.
And I'd say the Patriots. Speaking as a Patriots fan, they're not too bad with their own personnel.
Right, exactly. We can toss on the footy pajamas.
That's right.
And just kind of to wrap things up on the backs, these are guys that I feel like they're being really boosted in value by the line in front of them, which to me means if they face any significant competition, be it in training camp or throughout the season, they do have a chance to really lose their job. And the first one right up top is Darren McFadden, who to me had the quietest 1,000-yard season of any running back. And it's because of the guys in front of him. You know, there's a lot of talk about, you know, who the Cowboys could add. You know, will they add Henry? You know, could they actually grab
just adding
Zeke Elliott?
Morris. Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
So, you know, I think, if you know, I would take Morris ahead of McFadden right now. I just think he's a better player.
Yeah, I can't imagine that there's a running back, you know, out there that they add in addition to Morris that I wouldn't take in front of McFadden as well. So it seems like definitely more if they don't add a rookie with at least a high pick. Alfred Morris should have that starting job by week one.
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that.
Yeah. After that, I mean, the Eagles are another team that have really solid run blockers. You know, Jason Peters, Kelsey, they added Brandon Brooks to pair up with Lane Johnson on the right side of the line. And, you know, Matthews and Murray, it seemed like they had sort of down years. Obviously, when Ryan Matthews finally got to take hold of the starting job, he seemed to be the much better runner behind that line. But again, that's another situation where I feel like if the Eagles bring in, you know, any sort of talented running back, that Ryan Matthews could definitely lose his job there.
Yeah, for me, it just seems like it's you know, it's got the potential to be just another cluster where, the you know, they're going to talk up Darren Sproles. Awesome. You know, like if some people have mocked Zeke Elliott to there, you know, God, I would much rather have Elliott, but if it's any other rookie running back, it has the potential to just be, I don't think that's going to be a very good team.
Yeah. And definitely it seems like a situation I would avoid, sort of like the Giants running backs last year. It's just a really crowded room. Everyone kind of does something a little different. So yeah, you're absolutely right. The last one, and this guy has become really popular, and he's certainly another guy that's going to be all over sleeper lists to the point where he's coming off the board in the second round. Jeremy Langford, you know, out in Chicago, they're actually kind of facing a lot of turnover with their offensive line. Will Montgomery, their center, is now a free agent. So is Vlad Dukakis. Jermon Bushrod is gone, but he only played half of the season until Charles Leno replaced him. They brought in Bobby Massey. It just looks like there's a lot of turnover there, and Langford was another guy that had a great stretch kind of in the middle of the season when Forte got hurt. This is just one of those guys I feel like I'm definitely going to be avoiding in drafts, again, because of the small sample size. I know a lot of people are high on him, but Kyle Long again moving, now he's going to be back at tackle. I just feel like that's a little too much turnover for me on the line for me to have any real trust in Langford, where he's probably going to end up being drafted.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to put that line in the vast middle of the pack in the league, and probably it's not for me going to be a reason to take a player or not take a player. I think it's a fairly neutral situation. I think Langford's probably going to get too much hype for me to be into him. He's not Matt Forte. You know, he's just not as talented, but he's pretty good. You know,
he's still a talented runner.
Yeah, I mean, for his size, he's got good straight ahead speed. He can cut once. Like he's okay. I don't think he's a superstar. I don't think he'll ever be a fantasy superstar. I think he's okay. You know, if you're telling me that the hype is going to get so bad that now people are considering him, you know, a top eight fantasy running back, that's too rich for my blood and I'm not going to own him. But if the market winds up being, no, he can be the number 15 running back, I would probably be okay with that.
Yeah, I was about to say 14. 14 would be like the spot I think I would start looking at him. There are definitely guys I want in front of him. Running backs and wide receivers. I would probably want about two or three wide receivers until I'm looking at Langford, which I know for me and for where he's probably going to be ending up in drafts, I'm just not going to end up having a lot of him.
Agreed.
All right. Well, that's all we got for running backs and offensive lines. Chris, I want to say thanks so much for taking the time to hop on this podcast. It was a real honor having you on.
It was fun to be here. Thank you very much. And good luck and keep it going. Hopefully folks, you know, will subscribe and keep listening to you and maybe throw in a listen to me every once in a while.
Absolutely. The Harris Football Podcast is, it's definitely one of my favorites. I mean, it was no fluke winning Podcast of the Year.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yeah, that was a surprise.
So there you have it. A half hour with one of the greatest minds and biggest names in fantasy football. Everyone make sure you go subscribe to the Harris Football Podcast on iTunes. While you're there, subscribe to the Fantasy Force Podcast as well. Leave a review, leave a rating, and don't forget to follow me on Twitter at @the_ATJ. And if you like the Fantasy Force theme song, make sure you follow its creator, K Nice, on Twitter at @KNiceAdvice. And until next time, peace.